Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, March 3rd, 2018. This is episode 1467. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass, then delivers them right to your door, ready to display right out of the box. Visit fracture.me and use the code TECHGUY15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Wow, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We could talk smartphones. We can talk smartwatches. We could talk all that jazz at 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you'd like to talk iTech with me, I'd love to do that with you. All you have to do is pick up the phone and dial. Anybody have any dial phones out there? Like that? 888. That's a lot. That's a lot of eights. 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I guess 888 is better than 800 on a dial phone. Does anybody even know? I know a few of you do. But we say it still. We dial the phone. There's a lot of anachronisms like that. I always find it funny because even on the iPhone and the Android phone, the icons, the phone icon is a handset, which I bet you people under 25 don't even know, you know, what's that? What's a handset? You know, they don't have any idea. No idea. 8888-ASK-LEO. We have a website. That's techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And we are here today to talk about anything on your mind, although I like to often start the show with the latest, you know, big tech stories. Last week, the Samsung Galaxy S9 and S9 Plus were announced. Samsung did some things I really like. First of all, they didn't change the phone much, which is fine because the S8 was pretty close to perfection. Lovely edge-to-edge screen, kind of a curvy liquid glass, beautiful look. And it had a great camera, and you know, they did the little things that were annoying about the S8 and frankly the Note 8, and they fixed some of those things. For instance, they took the fingerprint reader, which was right next to the camera, right there, and in kind of in an awkward position, and moved it down a little bit. So it's going to be more where it ought to be, if you ask me, on the back, kind of in the like a third of the way down in the middle. That's you know, where everybody else is putting theirs. It's still square. Somebody got to tell Samsung, fingers are round. And, you know, everybody else has a round fingerprint reader. But that's all right. I think it'll – well, we'll see. I'll try it when it comes out. I ordered one. We should have it in a week or two. The 16th. That's two. What else? They took the single camera on the S8 and they made it like the Note 8, which is a double camera, you know. But they did some very interesting things with the camera. I think it's going to be very good. In fact, it's already been reviewed as the best camera phone ever by DxOMark, which is an independent company. I'm finding a little odd that both DisplayMate and DxOMark, which are third-party reviewers of screen quality for DisplayMate and camera for DxOMark, have both almost at the same time come out with their reviews of the S9, and they're in both cases the best ever. You know, I'm wondering, I don't know, maybe I just have an evil mind. First of all, Samsung had to supply them with one, right? Because you can't buy them. That's why I buy them, because I don't want some sort of fancied up phone, gussied up phone that Samsung wants the reviewers to have. I want to have the one that everybody else is going to get when they get in line at the store and buy it. Sure, it costs a little more, but you're worth it. However, I have no reason not to trust them. DxO Mark said the still camera score was 104. I didn't even know that it went beyond 100. I thought 100 was perfect, or maybe they've invented a better than perfect. It's 104 for this still camera. Video, as usual, I mean, video on these cameras is not quite as good as the still, but still, nevertheless, very good. They say this is, easy, the best camera they've ever seen on a smartphone. Total score of 99, brought down a little bit by the video score. Does well in bright light, but does well in low light. And that's one of the things that's interesting about this S9. They have a dual aperture lens. Now, if you're a serious photographer, you know what that means. The aperture is how big the opening is on the lens. And fancy cameras, not point and shoots, not usually camera phones, but fancy cameras, you can set the opening. You can open it up if you want more light in, close it down if you want less light in. Usually don't get that even on a point and shoot. Most point and shoots are what we call fixed aperture. They have F2.8. F is the aperture designation, f-stop. So F2.8 or F, thereabouts. If you get a really fancy camera that has the capability of changing aperture and you buy a really expensive lens, you can get the more wide open the lens is, the more light it can let in, the more expensive it is. The glass is hard. The optics are hard on that. So you can get, I have some lenses that are F1.2. Those are phenomenally expensive. There's even a few out there that are 0.9. That's like ridiculous because the glass is so hard to make for something that wide open. But commonly, a good camera, F1.4, F1.8. We've seen F1.8 in some camera phones. But Samsung's going to do something different. I think one other company's done this before, it seems to me. They're going to have one of the lenses has two apertures, a fast 1.5. That's very fast for a camera phone. 1.5, that'll be for the low light conditions where it's dark. And, by the way, I should point out, sometimes people think, you mean like what, one candle? No, low light is like indoors. When you're at a birthday party taking a picture of a kid blowing out the cake, that's really low light. When you're just indoors, that's low light. So we'll benefit here. And this is something traditionally camera phones don't do well at low light. Digital cameras in general don't do as well in low light as film cameras. And then if it's brighter out there, you don't want it always F1.5, because what if you're in a bright sunny day? So then they go all the way up to F2.4. That also improves sharpness. So one of the things that happens when you open up the aperture like that is that something called the depth of field, the where it's in focus, gets narrower and narrower. So if you want everything to be sharp, you want a higher aperture. So they kind of balance the thing. 2x optical zoom, super slow-mo, 960 frame per second slow-mo. It's got to be slower than anything else. Now, you notice I haven't mentioned megapixels. I think people have gotten over the idea that more megapixels is better. Certainly the high-end cameras, the fancy digital SLRs have high, I think there's one that has 42 megapixels. But most of the time, 12, 13 is fine. And that's what you're going to get on this 12 megapixel camera. Optical image stabilization on both lenses, that's good. And they have the focusing that Google did with its Pixel 2 and Pixel phone, the dual pixels focusing, which is a really kind of cool way to do it. 960 frame per second slow-mo. That's at 720p, so it's a little lower resolution. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you. Let's just put it this way. DxO Mark says, the best camera ever. Nice on this S9. Was already a very, very good camera. Nah, even better. But, of course, that's what happens. The next phone from Google or Apple will be better, right? And then DisplayMate, which does reviews of displays, says it's the best display they've ever seen. Now, this isn't a surprise. Samsung's makes these OLED displays, even for Apple. They said this is A+, the highest ever grade we've given it. It is considerably better than your existing smartphone, your living room 4K Ultra or HD TV, your tablet, your laptop, or your computer monitor. It is, here's the quote, virtually indistinguishable from perfect. What? Well, now I have to have it. So there's the S9. It's on its way March 16th. All four carriers in the U.S. should be a very interesting thing. I just thought I'd fill you in on the details there. We are going to get to the phones and your calls. We could talk about the Galaxy S9 or anything else on your mind. Some rumors about the iPhone, the new iPhone, too, we could talk about later this year. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88-88-ASK. Leo. Kim Schaffer is here. She's answering the phone. She's working so very hard. Hi, Kim.
Had to get through the rain, sleet, and snow to get here today.
Yeah, we needed the rain.
No, we needed it. There was a little bit of a hailstorm just as I was leaving the house.
Could be worse. You know, back east, a million people without power.
Yeah,
I feel
that's
bad.
Crazy. Yeah. We've got nothing.
Yeah, we don't. You know, we don't. All we got is earthquakes, and we haven't had a bad one of those since 1989.
The one in Napa three, four years ago was a 6-point-something. That was
that was bad for the wine country,
yeah,
wasn't it? Because
was
a lot of barrels and bottles tumbled off the shelves, making that year a very special year.
Vintage.
Who should I talk to today?
Ken in Vancouver might have some tips for our caller last week that couldn't get all the functions on the home assistant that shall not be named to work in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
He might have some
Thank you.
Help for him.
Thank you. Hi, Ken. How are you? Welcome to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. So you have an Amazon Echo. Of course, you can buy it in Canada now.
Now you can, but when I bought mine, they weren't available in Canada. So I had one sent up through my sister out of Phoenix. And it's been working great up here. One of the problems that I suspect some of the people are having trouble with their products in Canada is quite recently they've opened up a Canadian Amazon website, and they've been directing most of the Canadian customers to go to that site. Unfortunately, that site doesn't support a lot of the Amazon Echo functions up here, like, for instance, Audible books you can't use to the Canadian site.
Yeah, because that's because Audible is, and by the way, they're a sponsor, and I love them, but they have different rights for each country. Because publishers sell the rights per country.
Right. My recommendation, actually, for the customers up here is do not go to the Canadian website, but sign up with the American site, the Amazon.com, and all your functions will work.
Interesting. Do you have to have an American credit card to do that?
No, you do not. You just have to be a member of the Amazon American site, and things will work properly.
You don't have to have a Prime account or anything?
No. I did have a Prime account for a while. Trouble is, it didn't work for anything being shipped to Canada.
Yeah.
So
right.
I ended up canceling that.
Yeah, there was no point. Right. Well, that's cool.
Exactly.
So there's no restrictions on Canadians using the Amazon.com site.
No. One of the restrictions that still seems to be in place is some of the, I think, Amazon Music, for instance, doesn't work up here.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and I suspect that's probably because of the digital rights are controlled by...
Well, it's the same issue as the Audible stuff, right? Is that those rights are sold on a per-country basis.
So. Yeah, but it's funny. The Amazon works, or the Audible works fine up here.
Yeah.
And I listen to Audible books through my Echo all the time.
Nice. Well, hey, I appreciate the help, Ken. That's a really interesting workaround. I'm surprised that even works. You just use the U.S. site, Amazon.com, instead of Amazon.ca. Joe in Victorville, California. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Oh, my. Oh, hello. Welcome.
Hey. Man, I don't believe I'm talking to you.
Oh, it's just little old me. Come on now.
Yeah, I've been listening to you from the first day you started in KFI.
Nice. 2004.
I believe so. Anyway,
one of these days I'm gonna get this job for. I'm just a temporary employee, but someday I hope to be permanent.
Oh, I hope so.
I'm just joking. Anyway, what can I do for you?
Well, I have a 60-inch Samsung television, and it's about 3.5 years old.
Okay.
And about 2 weeks ago, I was sitting down watching TV, and all of a sudden, this black line appears and goes all the way across the whole TV.
Oh, no. How thick?
Maybe like the size of a string.
Thin, very thin, a thin line.
Very thin.
Yeah.
And it's always there.
Yeah, it's an LCD TV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the way it works, in fact, really all pixel-addressed TVs work this way, is that they have to address, you know, a row and a column, and one row of the electronics is out. And that's right. That black line. It's a pixel width line. And that's bad because you can't fix it. You can't fix it.
That's what everybody's been telling me.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do. You know, this happened to me. I was showing, I'm trying to remember, was it LG? I was doing live with Regis and Kelly in New York City. And LG had just announced 105-inch LCD. Yep. Wow, 105. It was the biggest one ever. They flew it out in a 747, in the belly of a 7, all the way from Las Vegas, because I'd seen it at the Consumer Electronics Show. They had four engineers. It came in a giant metal box. They came and they opened it up. They put it on the set of Live with Regis and Kelly. It had a black line, just like you describe, down the middle, and they were calling Japan. They were, if it's Japan, it must have been Sharp. I think it was Sharp, actually. They were calling Japan. They were, they have long conversations. Never fixed it. And never fixed it. So what we said is, okay, well, don't mention it. And,
right,
and if Regis doesn't see it, we're okay. He didn't. But, yeah, it happens. Now, is it black or is it just one color?
No, it's black.
Yeah, yeah.
Black.
You lost. Generally, that means a physical hardware failure.
And no repair at all.
Not that I know of. And, you know, nowadays with these flat screens, here's the bad news. There generally isn't any repair. They're you know, when they repair it, they replace it, because these things are made, you know, in order to get them thin and you know, they're just made by robots. And there's no, you can't get in with a soldering iron and fix it, I'm sorry to say, or as the Canadians would say, a soldering iron and fix it. So, yeah, I'm afraid if you either live with it or you get a new TV. Good news is the TVs are cheap and you should be able to get a nice one. Maybe even a little bit better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What a bummer. I just hate it when that happens. We put it in the Regis and Kelly, we just put it on a, I think a field of green or something like that. And it was huge. The thing was gigantic. There's video of it somewhere on the interwebs.
Find it.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's actually YouTube video. Thank you to Mick in our chat room. I guess he posted it from a VHS recording way back when of that Sharp 108-inch LCD TV. I don't know if this is the one that had the line down it, though. I think maybe it was another one then. Anyway. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you want to talk high tech. Normally Scott Wilkinson would be joining us at this hour. He's taking a break, much deserved, taking some time off, enjoying life. That means more time for you. Arthur, New Hampshire. Leo Laporte. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, Leo. I've got a little problem. I cut the cord a couple of years ago, and I've been watching YouTube videos. There's more on there than I will ever watch, and I really enjoy, especially the PBS series, Nova, Modern Marvels, that sort of thing. But most of those, the video quality is terrible. I think it's been so compressed that it's almost unwatchable. And well, most of the other video, your video is right at the top, and most of the other stuff is fine, but some of my favorite programming, other than yours, is really, really bad. And I wonder if there's any way that that can be, some of that detail can be recovered.
Well, it's directly tied to bandwidth. Like, it's directly tied to bandwidth. So you can get YouTube 4K. I watch it 4K, and it's superb quality. Of course, it depends. I just was playing that Live with Regis and Kelly clip from 2007 or thereabouts.
I saw that. That was actually terrible.
That was how it was recorded. You could see it was done from a VHS tape, so it was just bad quality. So you have to make the distinction between whether the source material is good quality or not. But if you're watching high quality source material and it's looking like it was shot through a potato, then it's probably has to do with your bandwidth, or YouTube's not sensing your bandwidth properly. There's a little gear in the lower right of the video that allows you to choose what quality you're getting.
I have adjusted that. Usually the highest I have 50 megabit internet, and I have a Pixel computer and a Chromecast, so everything is fine on this end. Sony Bravia TV. And most of the video is fine. You know, it's just those particular series. I think they're maybe.
Are you watching? Are you watching YouTube TV, or you're just watching regular YouTube?
Oh, regular YouTube.
Okay.
They have all of these Past Nova series, all that stuff available on YouTube.
It's uploaded from PBS. It's not. It's not some third party guy just putting it up there. It's actual.
No, I would assume it's uploaded.
Well, you can tell if you look at the what channel it is on YouTube, who created it. Generally speaking, that's going to make a difference as well. You know, somebody's recording it is not going to be as good as the original PBS stuff. So so a couple of things I should say. First of all, 50 megabits is more than enough. But remember, when your ISP, your internet service provider, says 50 megabits, they have a little weasel word in there that most people don't notice. That's two weasel words. Up to 50 megabits. In other words, we're not going to give you more than 50 megabits, but you may well get less. So one thing to do is check your speed. Go to speedtest.net or my favorite is dslreports.com. And see, they have a little speed test on there and see what you're actually getting. Now, even if you're getting 15 or 20 megabits consistently, that should be enough to get high quality video on YouTube. 50 is enough to do 4K. So as long as you're getting consistent, 25, 15, 25, 30 megabits consistent. Remember, if there's other people in the house, they're sharing that, so you may not be getting that to your TV. If all of that is okay, and you've got the setting, the little gear on YouTube set to HD, so you want to look at that little gear in the lower right-hand corner of YouTube, click it, and normally the quality is set for auto, but you can choose the quality and up to the top quality available on it, right? So that's going to tell you something about what quality is available to you. 144, 240, 360, all of those will look pretty smudgy. HD starts at 720p. And if you're picking 720 or 1080 and it still looks awful, but it's not hesitating, it's not stuttering, then that's a puzzlement. YouTube adjusts, like all streaming video, YouTube adjusts. Now, the fact you're able to watch us, and we're sending 720p. When you go to our live stream, twit.tv/live or youtube.com/twit, same thing, 720p. And that should give you pretty much an HD experience. If your YouTube is not looking as good as we are, actually, one thing you could try, go to our YouTube version of our content. So you can watch our content directly from our streams. That's at my website, twit.tv/live. That looks good. Then go to YouTube.com/twit. Twit, I should explain, is not me insulting myself. It's not a self-deprecating label. It stands for This Week in Tech. That's the podcast network. And this, we do a live stream of all the shows we do, including this show. So you can go to YouTube.com/twit, click the live stream, see how that looks. If that looks bad, then maybe something going on with you and YouTube. couple of other things. Wi-Fi is not as good as wired. Not only not as fast, but it often Wi-Fi stops. And your Wi-Fi, you might be getting 50 megabits from your internet service provider. Your Wi-Fi probably isn't all of that. It might be 60% of that. So let's say it's, you know, what would that be? 30 megabits. And then, Wi-Fi is going to have some other issues. If there's, for instance, a number of Wi-Fi signals in your area, Wi-Fi is a, this is not widely known, but it is a big problem with Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is a collision-based network. Ethernet is as well. And the way it works, if there's other traffic on the same channel you're on, the same, not 2.4 gigahertz, that's actually a band, a width of spectrum that you have, but there's within that, there's 11 channels, there's really three practical channels within that. If your neighbor's Wi-Fi is on that same channel, when your neighbor's Wi-Fi is talking, when he's talking to it, your Wi-Fi will say, oh, oops, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, and stop. And wait a random amount of time, and then try again. And if your neighbor's still talking, go, oh, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, and stop. So Wi-Fi has this this behavior that actually is somewhat problematic in areas where Wi-Fi is congested. And that would also cause a degradation of the signal. So there's a lot of different things that can go into this. I think a good test would be for you to watch our video, because I know what quality we're sending. Both, which is 720 progressive, 720p. Watch it both on our live stream on my website and then on YouTube. And if there's a difference there, then maybe the YouTube is the issue. If there's, and if it's, if there's no reason why certain videos shouldn't look good on YouTube unless they're bad to begin with. And that absolutely happens. YouTube doesn't make any guarantee. One thing you might take a look at for cord cutters, YouTube has a great service called YouTube TV. It's at tv.youtube.com that gives you your, in most cases, your local, depends where you live, your local stations, plus some great cable, you know, cable news, cable sports. And I think it's $35. It's all streaming. They have a DVR built into it. Sony has one too. They call the View, PlayStation View. There's Sling TV. The number of companies that offer these, what they call over-the-top, internet-based TV. And you might get better results that way. But I'm not sure. If it's only YouTube that looks bad, then there may be something about, you know, you and YouTube. YouTube's not liking you. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's keep talking. High tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is YouTube TV, which I really like. I have I subscribe to it, which even though I don't need to it. So this is the live interface. This is the home interface, which makes suggestions. This is the DVR interface. And then you can search, which is nice. So I can, on my cable guide, you can see I'm getting my local Fox, CBS, ABC, NBC stations. Doesn't look like I'm getting PBS, so that's a negative. And if you watch Nova, that would be a big negative. TBS, TNT, bunch of sports, including ESPN, ESPN2, SEC, and ESPNU, Fox Sports, NBC Sports. There was a ton of sports. All three big news channels, Fox, MSNBC, and CNN. A few cable channels, including, I'm really happy they just added Turner Classic Movies. And I love the cable guide because you can see what's on. You can actually kind of watch it by hovering over it. So this is all what's coming from the live stream. And what is that, $35 a month? You also get YouTube Red and unlimited YouTube music with it. But no PBS. That's because I think PBS wants you to pay for it, basically, directly to them. But you can, you know, you can get a PBS network, too. Uh, Yeah. Yeah, I pay for my our local YouTube, PBS station to get access. On my Apple TV, I have a little PBS thing. Yeah, Hosanna, it depends on how you're watching it. I couldn't watch the Super Bowl streamed onto a mobile device, but I could watch it on my desktop, which is weird. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. The phone number, Pew Research Center on Internet and Technology, does regular studies of American Internet use, and their new study of the social media landscape in early 2018 is very interesting. Speaking of YouTube, very interesting. You want to hear some stats, some numbers? 78% of 18 to 24-year-olds, 78% use Snapchat. Most of them, 71%, visit the platform many times a day. Not surprised. 71% of 18 to 24-year-olds also use Instagram, 45% Twitter. Roughly two-thirds of U.S. adults, 68%, say they use Facebook. Three-quarters of that number on a daily basis. Facebook is easily, used by a majority of Americans every single day. YouTube, even higher. That's the first time they've measured YouTube. Get this one. 73% of adults say they use YouTube online or on their cell phone. That's how huge YouTube is. 73%. So, it ought to look good, I guess. It's kind of amazing if you come from a background like mine where you've watched as technology has grown, as the internet has grown, as penetration of the internet into the United States culture has grown. It's interesting for a few reasons. First of all, the total dominance now in 20 years from 0 to 78%, just dominant. But also what's interesting is how these companies, for me, from a purely technical point of view, handle this kind of massive bandwidth. It's remarkable. Think about YouTube. They're streaming high-quality video to hundreds of millions of people at any given moment without a hiccup. In fact, if a video is slow to start, we complain. What's wrong with this? What's wrong with this machine? Pretty amazing. I'll put the link to this study in the show notes because it's fascinating to read. Among adults 50 and up, you would think adults probably not watching YouTube, 56% watch YouTube. 18 to 24, 94% watch YouTube. Wow. Yeah, the younger you get, the more likely you are to watch YouTube, the more likely you are to use Facebook, the more likely you are to use Snapchat. Actually, 50-plus adults, only 7% use Snapchat. I use Snapchat. I'm in that group. That's my job, that's why. Instagram, only 16% of 50 and up, but 71% of 18 to 24. So I think unless kids grow out of it, it could be this is, most people who use Lego toys are under 15. It could be that, it doesn't mean that Lego is going to become popular with the over 50 set in 20 years, 30 years. But I think with this, maybe it does. Maybe it means that as time goes by, YouTube will become more and more pervasive in the American culture. 94% of 18 to 24-year-olds watch YouTube. If you know any 18 to 24-year-olds, I know a few, you'd know that that's, that's so true. They don't watch TV. They really don't. They watch YouTube. Fascinating. 8888 Ask Leo. On we go to the show. Debbie in Palm Springs, California is next. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Leo. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm happy to talk to you.
I love your show every week. I have a problem with my Microsoft Edge.
Okay, that's the browser that comes with Windows 10.
Correct. My husband and I each have our own profile set up on our account. His works perfectly, and 2 days ago I went in and I can't open mine.
Uh-oh. Now, when you say your own profile, that means you log in with a different login and password to the computer?
Correct.
Okay. So when he logs in and he's running Edge, it works fine. Yours, you click the Edge, the E, and nothing happens, or?
Yes, nothing happens. It just won't open or do anything.
It's broken.
It's broken, I know. And I went to the help. I called Microsoft yesterday, and they gave me what to do if your Edge isn't working, and I'm trying to do all the steps that they've given me, and it still doesn't seem to be working. I'm running the repair little thing right now.
Right.
Yeah.
There are three stages of fixing any program, but browsers are particularly vulnerable, by the way, to this. This is not at all unusual. All it means is you went to a site. You know, the browser keeps data from sites you visit in its cache. And sometimes that data can be damaged, in which case when the browser tries to load it, it goes, or an extension. Those can be added by accident or on purpose. Sometimes you go to a site and it says, you know, kind of you click OK, 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 and you've installed something. And that can choke it as well. So there are three levels: reset, repair, and reinstall.
OK.
The reset is you can do that in the settings.
I actually am doing the repair right now. I see reset right underneath it.
Yeah. So you have three choices in the settings. Repair what doesn't affect the app's data. That may not be sufficient.
Okay.
Right, because that's going to leave that cache and extensions around. So try it. That's the first one to do for sure. If repair doesn't fix it, though, then that button right below it, reset it. And what that'll do is that's going to clear everything out. It's going to be as if you had a brand new browser. Clears the cookies, clears the settings, clears the history, clears passwords, anything you've been storing in there. Okay. So you don't do that unless repair doesn't work.
And how long should the repair take? Because it seems like it's running an awfully long time.
Well, it shouldn't take more than 20 minutes, half an hour.
Okay, and if it's more than that, what
then,
should I do?
Then you just stop.
Okay.
In fact, I would reboot the computer at that point.
Okay.
See if Edge works. If it doesn't, then it's time for the reset button. And if that doesn't work, there is a third step that is probably not going to be necessary. I can't imagine it be necessary. But if the Edge program itself gets damaged, you know, like any program, look, your hard drive is storing this stuff, but it's not perfect.
Right.
And if one bit, I mean, there's a billion bits in this program, but if one bit is wrong in the wrong spot, it won't work.
Okay.
That's how fragile programs are. So in that case, you'd boot into safe mode. And when you boot into Windows safe mode, you can uninstall Edge, which is kind of complicated. But I'll tell you what, I'll put a link to an article that describes all three processes at TechGuyLabs.com.
And how do I get to your website? That's what I was trying to get also.
Well, you can't do it in Edge, but TechGuyLabs.
I actually can open Chrome. I can get to my internet through Chrome.
Yeah, I prefer to use Chrome. Yeah, see, that makes sense. It's not your internet. It's Edge.
It's Edge, right?
It's just a program, and it's one of these things is going to fix it. But I'll put an article from the Windows Club, which is a fan blog, but they have I think the nicest article, better than Microsoft's, on the three steps you can go through.
Perfect.
Okay, you'll get it fixed. It's not a big deal. Thank you. I appreciate your call.
Bye bye.
Take care. This is people laugh at me when I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway because I like it when you laugh. This can happen from cosmic rays. That sounds goofy. That sounds crazy. Sounds like you're listening to Coast, right? Cosmic rays. But it's actually true. You know, particles come to us from the sun. Most of them are eaten up by the atmosphere. The rest land innocuously. But every once in a while, a cosmic particle, an atomic particle from the sun, can strike a hard drive and flip a bit. There's other things, of course. But if that bit is flipped from a 1 to a 0, most of the time your hard drive is like the planet Earth. It's mostly empty, mostly ocean. And a stray cosmic ray hitting it, 99% of the time is not going to do anything. But if for whatever reason, more likely, of course, it's an electrical discharge or some failure in the hard drive, but just one bit gets flipped. And if it's in the right spot, when that program's loading, instead of a true, it gets a false. Or instead of 1,000, it gets 999. It's just not going to work. It'll break. And if that's what has happened, then there only is one fix. You have to reinstall the whole thing. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. We talk about smartphones, of course. We talk about smartwatches. Of course, really, there's only one left, isn't there? Of course, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can still call. Just use Skype out or some sort of VoIP out service, and you can call 8888 Ask Leo. Yeah, I just saw some numbers from, I guess it's IDC. Apple doesn't break out its numbers. Actually, that's an interesting story, too, breaking out numbers. You know, when publicly held companies give their annual reports and they do their analyst calls, you know, every quarter they have to call, you know, announce their earnings and so forth. That's for people who are buying or own stock in the company. That's informational. The Securities and Exchange Commission, you know, is says you have to tell your investors how you're doing. So they know if that stock's doing, you know, if they're getting their return on their investment and if they're thinking about buying the stock. People need to know that stuff. But increasingly, tech companies have not reported details of product sales. And Apple's terrible about this. Apple doesn't tell you anything about, for instance, how Apple Watch sales specifically are going. They'll give you generic things. Well, this is the biggest quarter we've ever had, or we sold 50% more watches, or, but none of that is very useful. You know, and I've never understood really how they get away with that. Because if you're buying stock in a company like Apple, don't you need to know, well, how, you know, not generally how it's doing, but specifically how it's doing. Apple's not the only one. Google doesn't break it down. You know, most of these companies don't give you the kind of information you want. And I think the Securities and Exchange Commission has started to feel a little bit perturbed about this. They're asking for more information from some of these companies. They're saying, look, you're a publicly held company. You need to be a little bit more detailed in some of the information you reveal. And I kind of agree. As a journalist, I want to know. Apple Watch is a good example. We know it's doing well from Apple's point of view, but we don't know how well. So for that, we have to rely on companies like IDC, which is an analyst company, and they do all sorts of tricks. They call stores. They do. I don't know how they figure it out. But anything they come up with is an estimate. It's not official. But this month, they came out with a report estimating last quarter's sales for the Apple Watch. So that would be through December of last year, right? And Apple had a new Series 3 Apple Watch and so forth. They also looked at it compared to the competitors, which is kind of disappearing. Fitbit, I guess, is the closest thing. The Android Wear watches have kind of died out. According to IDC, Apple sold 8 million watches last quarter. Easily the best-selling, not just watch, but wearable. One in five, every five wearables shipped last quarter was an Apple Watch. Fitbit, compared to the 8 million Apple sold, IDC saying 5.4 million. Xiaomi makes a Android Wear watch that's pretty popular. They sold 5 million, which is a lot, probably mostly in China where Xiaomi is headquartered. But remember, Fitbit sells a lot of inexpensive wearables, too, a lot less expensive than the Apple Watch. It starts at $250 and can go all the way up to $1,200 if you get the fancy one. So Apple's pretty much over, I think. Samsung, which normally, you know, is a pretty big player in the smartwatch. I actually really like my Samsung S3 Frontier. It's a nice smartwatch. Only 1 million units. Only 1 million units. Apple, 8 million. Samsung, 1. That gives you some idea. So, unfortunately, I like, you know, I only say unfortunately because there should be competition. More competition means more innovation. You know, companies work harder. They don't own the market. This is a market Apple owns. And, you know, the truth is I wear an Apple Watch every day now. I used to wear an Android Wear watch just as often. You know, I'd go back and forth. I love that Samsung S3. And the Samsung S3 does some things that Apple's does not. For instance, I use it a lot as a fitness device. I think that's primarily how people use the Apple Watch. But the Apple Watch, you have to tell it when you're about to take a walk or get on a treadmill or lift some weights. The Samsung notices what you're doing, keeps track of it, and then later says, what did you do? It'll even pause if you're on a hike. This is really convenient. You stop to get something to eat. It pauses, and then it starts up again. It vibrates your wrist saying, I just paused. Apple's watch, you have to tell it. On the other hand, Apple has probably a much more accurate heart rate indicator than anything else I've ever tried. It really is the only one that is really accurate, at least compared with chest straps or when you hold those handles on the Stairmaster in the gym, you know, that those I think are very accurate. This chest strap's very accurate. Apple Watch is the only one that matches pretty consistently those. And Apple Watch has, more and more cool features, things like calling an Uber or a Lyft directly from the watch. You can dictate to the watch. You could send messages, even make phone calls on some of the watches. Some of the watches, the Series 3 watches, have cellular service. You pay extra for it, but that's pretty cool. I get calls on my Apple Watch, and I feel like Dick Tracy. I'm talking into my watch. So it's getting clear that Apple is pulling away with this one. At least that's the numbers we're getting. 8888, ask Leo. I did order a Samsung Galaxy S9, the Lilac. They said March 14th, so I should have it in 2 weeks in time to give you a review. A little later on the show, I want to talk about something that just came out because I get a lot of calls asking about dashboard cams. People like the idea of having a recorder, a video recorder recording, you know, let's say you get in an accident. You've got video of the accident or somebody backs into you. You've got proof that they backed into you, that kind of thing. And then we often get calls, I want one that goes backward and forward. Well, I've been trying one out that I just got. They're starting to ship now. It's a little pricey, $350. Easily the best I've ever tried. It's the best dashboard cam ever. It's from a company called Owl. Owl, owlcam.com. It has LTE built into it. So it's actually streaming all the time. I could right now look inside my car. And I'll tell you why you want that. If somebody breaks into your car, you have video of them breaking in. Of their faces. It records backward and forward at all times. You can, if you've got an Owl cam, you can talk to it. You could say, okay, presto, that's the keyword. And it will save the last, I think, 30 seconds. So if there's an incident, it's very interesting. Got a microphone built into it and speakers too. You can talk to somebody driving your car. Hey, I see you stealing my car. Get out of there. That would work nicely. Even has a very bright light it could turn on in the car if something's going on and you want to see more of it. I'll give you a more thorough review after I've used it for a while. But boy, I am impressed. So people have been calling and asking about that. There is a new dashboard cam, kind of Apple quality. The packaging and everything's beautiful. From Owl, O-W-L, Owl Cam, at owlcam.com. I was very impressed with it. In fact, now I want to get one for my wife's car. I don't know if she'll let me. She may not want me peeking into her car when she's driving it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to get back to the phones and take your calls. And as I mentioned last hour, everything we talk about is up on the website, techguylabs.com. I'll put links, articles, even audio and video from the show. That's free, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I want to talk high tech. That's all I do, all day, all night. When I'm at home, in the middle of the night, I'll wake up. I'll talk about, you know, that new Galaxy S9 sounds like a fine phone. 88, so I might as well make a living doing it. 8888, ask Leo. Jacob, Los Angeles. Hi, Jacob.
Hey, Leo, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks.
Well, Leo, I bought the iPhone X on your recommendation at Best Buy, paid the whole thing, $1,000 plus cash, very happy with it. But I traveled to Austria. It's an unlocked phone, international version. I use T-Mobile. I go to Austria, go to buy a SIM card at T-Mobile Austria, put the SIM card in the phone, and it says, oops, it doesn't work. What in the heck? It's an unlocked phone.
So it's not carrier. So there's so phones can be locked to a carrier, but you're saying this is not locked to T-Mobile. Just because it's T-Mobile Austria doesn't mean you can use it if it's locked to T-Mobile USA.
This is an unlocked phone.
It's unlocked.
T-Mobile, and they told me that what they do is if you buy an unlocked iPhone X,
they lock it.
Put your T-Mobile SIM card in first, they lock it.
They lock it. Sons of guns.
Yeah. I've had to go through a 72-hour ordeal to unlock it, put a new SIM card in, factory reset, plug into Mac, download all the apps again. Just a nightmare.
Yeah, I think this is not commonly known. AT&T does the same thing. A lot of the phone companies can retroactively lock an unlocked phone. It does seem wrong, doesn't it? I don't know what their justification is. Sadly, the FCC has been gutted, so I wouldn't expect any enforcement over this. But what used to happen, in fact, this all, the FCC ruled that the companies had to unlock the phones after a reasonable time period. This all started because you would buy a phone subsidized by T-Mobile or AT&T or Sprint or Verizon. So they'd say $200 for the phone, and you have to be a customer for 2 years. And then if you decide to terminate early, you pay a fee. And meanwhile, that phone is locked. You can only use it with us. That all made sense because they were paying the bulk of the cost of the phone. But you paid for that unlocked phone 100%, right?
That's right. Best Buy, all cash. In fact, it's a they checked IMEI, of course, at the store where I was buying the SIM card. It's an unlocked phone. They couldn't figure it out. Turns out that T-Mobile runs some kind of code through the SIM card.
Yeah. Isn't that awful? There's no justification. It's because you didn't subsidize the phone. I brought it to you fully paid. This is not your phone. This is my phone. I'm using your service. There's no excuse for it. And frankly, it should be illegal. But unless the FCC enforces, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
That is offensive. These phone companies, and T-Mobile, by the way, is the best of a bad bunch. But these phone companies, that's really offensive. And John Ledger, you got to stop doing that. Tweet John Ledger, say, why are you locking an unlocked phone? That is unconscionable. There's no economic justification. I should be free to move from you to any other carrier. That's the American way, right? If you don't like a company, you're not getting the service you want, you go to somebody else. You should never get locked that way.
Yeah, Leo, the thing you got to do is when you get a new iPhone X, go out and buy a $15 Verizon SIM card, put it in, and use that as the one to set it up, and then put your T-Mobile
there. You go.
And you'll save yourself all this stuff.
So then it wouldn't get locked that way.
That's right. It's T-Mobile that does this. They lock it up. And, you know, I said, can I temporarily unlock it? Because I could do that on my Android. They said, nope, can't do it. It's an iPhone. You can't temporarily
unlock it. That's unlawful. They are supposed to. They even do it for their customers who buy a phone from T-Mobile. If you're in good standing, you've had the phone for 6 months, it's fully paid, they will unlock it for you. They drag their feet, but they will unlock it for you. So for them to take a phone you bought outright from another company and lock it to their service, there's no excuse. No excuse.
Well,
that workaround works. Remember, Verizon had a consent decree that said if you're going to use these 700 megahertz band, the FCC said you can't lock the SIM slot. And Verizon has just started locking their SIM slot on the iPhone as well and all other phones. Basically, I think they've decided, we don't have to worry about the FCC anymore. They're in our back pocket.
Yeah, well, to do a factory reset in a foreign country, just no
not
fun.
Easy,
and then I had to convince them to sell me a SIM card at the store, telling them, no, it doesn't work, but I've got to go home and do an iCloud reset and the whole nine yards. And then they had to Apple had to send me an email to reset it. And then guess what, Leo? Turns out no factory reset needed. Apple just unlocked it. So the whole thing was messed up, start to finish, three-day ordeal, bunch of roaming charges later, and I finally have my unlocked iPhone X again. I've been tweeting John Ledger.
Good.
Whole nine yards.
You're smart. Call this radio show. Let's make this a PR stain on T-Mobile, which acts as if they care about customers. And you know what? They are the best of a bad bunch. But this is inexcusable. What is their justification? I don't understand why. You know, Verizon's excuse, we're going to lock the phones because it prevents theft. That's it. Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket. Maybe that's T-Mobile. Oh, yeah, prevents theft. That's the ticket. It's not about preventing theft. It's about locking you into their service, which cell phone companies want. They act like monopolies. They lock you in, early termination fees, and there's no excuse if you buy the phone outright. There's just no excuse.
Well, that's what they told me. They said it was for my own security to keep somebody selling me a bad SIM.
Yeah, there you go. It's for your benefit.
Unbelievable. But
it is.
Just wanted to get that out there.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, and you're right, and I'm sorry you had to go through that, and it should be illegal. It would be illegal if we had an FCC that hadn't been completely unmanned, completely devastated. If you want any more evidence, you know, after overturning net neutrality, if you want any more evidence that they are in the back pockets of the telecommunications industry, of course, don't forget Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, is a former lobbyist for Verizon. So you now have a government office that's supposed to regulate this, has rules about this. They're just ignoring their rules. And they're letting companies like Verizon and T-Mobile do this through a loophole. It's reducing theft, don't you know? That way somebody can't steal your phone and use it on another carrier. That's not what they care about. They don't want somebody to move. They want to lock you into their business, their service. And that's wrong. That's just wrong. Don't get me excited. Call your member of Congress. That's all we can do, right? Vote your conscience. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett. He's breathing the desert air, man. He can now. His sinuses are unclogged. Johnny Jett is our travel guru, joins us each and every week on the Tech Guys show to help us travel better with technology. Mr. JJ, how are you?
I'm doing much better than last week. Thank you very much.
You used one of your apps. You used that Heal app to get a doctor.
I did, actually. Right after I got off the phone with you last week, my head was killing me so much for my sinuses. I just tapped Heal in the old days, which is like a year ago.
I remember those days.
Yeah, a doctor would come within an hour. But then I've been seeing their ads on TV, so it took about 6 to 7 hours.
Oh,
for them to come.
They're getting busy. They need more doctors.
Big time. And they only go from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and they showed up right before 8 p.m. Oh. But it's $99.
Come to your house. House calls.
Yeah, and if you have insurance, it'll cover it. My insurance did not, and I don't know why, because I pay a boatload of insurance.
Welcome to the modern insurance world.
But again, it's only $99, which was actually cheaper than me going to see my doctor, waiting, you know, taking the time out, waiting in a office, and it's been great. And and you can use it on the road. I mean, unfortunately, they're not in every city, but they're in a good amount of places. I don't exactly remember where, but if they're not, there's other competing companies that are.
Yeah, I noticed there's more than one. The Heal app is at heal.com, and you could put it on your smartphone.
And we've used it 3 times now. I've only used it once, but I've called it for Natalie before and her mother once before. And every time the doctors are, you know, very impressive.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better, Mr. Jett.
For sure. So, and actually, I have a note that last week I mentioned this. Someone sent me this thing called a Print Pocket, and you told me to do a little quick
PRYNT. It's a little printer that actually attaches to your phone and turns it into a Polaroid camera.
Exactly. So do you have it?
No. We have the Canon Selfie or something like that is what I gave Lisa for Christmas.
Okay. Well, this
I think that was
good...
on your recommendation. Oh, no, it was on Chris Marquardt's recommendation.
Yeah, it wasn't on mine.
Yeah. What do you think of this?
It's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know how often am I going to print a photo when
I'm
traveling.
You have to carry this big clunky thing on your camera.
Well, it's not on your camera. You just carry it in your pocket.
Oh,
and then
I see.
You attach it to your phone, and it only works with iPhones from like iPhone 5 and up.
Okay. You need a lightning port, in other words, to do this. How much per print?
Well, it's $149 for this, and it comes with 10 pieces of zinc zero ink sticker paper.
Oh, it's the zinc stuff, yeah.
And if you want to buy a refill, it's for 40 of them, it's $19.99 on Amazon. But here's a photo I printed.
Cents. That's not bad. And it's about the size of a business card, right?
Yes, exactly.
What a cute picture of you and your little boy, Jack. Oh,
yes.
Wish but, everybody you know, could see that.
Only time I can really see it being useful is like, let's say we did a safari in Africa. We went to a village and we met all these kids who've never even seen a phone before. And, you know, they all wanted to see the photo on the back of the camera.
Yeah, you could give them pictures. Like, what a great way to make friends. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Something like that would be definitely useful. I don't know. It's more of a gimmick, go to a party. It's like an old Polaroid. So.
It's for teenagers, Johnny, but you're young at heart.
I am young at heart.
So that's PRYNT.co.co if you want to know more about that.
Yes, that's it. So, and I also have an app that I thought that we should talk about. I actually really want your opinion because I see that you're on it.
And Vero.
You
know,
got it.
Vero, I saw you ask to be my friend on Vero.
Yes. So what do you think of it?
I like how it works. It's kind of Instagram meets Twitter, but it's meets Google Plus. It's good for photography, book reviews, TV show reviews. There's been a little controversy around it. First of all, because one of its founders has, it seems, a checkered past, although it's not clear, and I don't want to indict him without, you know, really looking into it. But that's, I don't know if that's a big deal or not. You'd have to judge if it is for yourself. But the software itself, I think, is very good. The other reason it's been controversial is because it suddenly got popular last week for some reason. It's been around for months, but all of a sudden everybody's joined it, and that slowed their servers down a bit. But I think they've overcome that as well.
Yeah. It's actually been around since 2015, and it was founded by a Lebanese billionaire.
2 years it's been around?
Yes. I was shocked. But then
all
last
of a sudden
week,
everybody discovered it.
Number one app. And I think it's because everyone was sick and tired of Instagram changing their algorithms.
It could be. And Snapchat and changing their UI. Could be.
Exactly. And so I think people are just testing it out. And
I think it's pretty. What do you think? Do you like it?
Yeah. I mean, so far, I've only played with it for a little bit, and I posted a photo, and I'm about to do another
one. When you post, you get to choose from a camera, a link, a song, a movie or TV show, a book, or a place. So it's very focused on content instead of just, you know, statements like Twitter is. Twitter's mostly text. Now, I think one of the reasons it's popular is because Zack Snyder, the film director, the movie director, guy who did 300 and Superman and all that, is big on here. He's got 1.5 million followers, and I think he's driving a lot of traffic.
1.5 million followers on Vero?
I think it's everybody. Everybody's following him. I'm sorry, I take it back. Not 1.5 million. 168,000 followers.
Because they just crossed 1 million this week, and they were supposedly going to give. You know, they're going to start charging for their services, but the first 1 million were getting it free, and they're saying they're still giving it for free for a certain amount of time.
Last chance. It's iPhone, and is it Android too or just iPhone?
I think it's both. Let me just double check.
And Vero.
It's both.
You can follow Johnny Jett, and you can follow, I think I'm Leo Laporte on there. And it's pretty cool. It's good for photographers. It really is pretty. And you have the choice of sharing with everybody publicly or just close friends or friends or acquaintances.
That I like because you can quickly choose who you want to share it with.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also like is that they don't have ads and they don't play games with the algorithms. And I think Instagram's either going to have to change theirs.
I agree with you. I just want to see some stuff in chronological order.
Right.
I don't understand why they do something else. So no algorithm, just in order. And they don't have ads, but eventually you'll have to pay for this. Is that it?
That's what they say.
We get it free for life because we were in the first chunk of people, and you
I
might
must have
too.
Been right around a million. Right around a million. Because right after I looked at it, I looked at their website, and that's when they said we just crossed 1 million.
Right.
I was like, man, I wonder if I get some kind of prize of them.
Due to extraordinary demand, Vero extends free for life offer. I don't know. You know, the nice thing about this, it costs nothing to join. It costs nothing to try it. If you decide you like it, I join a new social network every day, it seems like. And almost all of them, Facebook and Twitter just own the world, I'm afraid.
They do.
Because a social network's meaningless unless your friends are on it. But I think this is worth trying, and I want to see some travel pictures from Johnny Jett.
I'm going to start posting them because I'm going to start traveling this weekend.
You right now as my best buddy.
All right.
do you have anything else for us? Is that it?
I do. I have a website too. It's called if you're into sushi, it's called sushiuniversity.jp.
Okay.
So I'm not telling you to sign up for their class. I'm not even sure. I'm sure they do have classes, but what I like is their visual dictionary. So if you're into sushi and you're going to Japan and you want to know everything about it, where it comes from, the type of year, how to pronounce it.
How did you know? How did you know? We're going to Japan next month.
I know.
How did
and
you know?
Natalie sent me this website, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to make it for Leo.
I don't want to eat something I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so go to the dictionary. The dictionary, I think, is the best part about it. They have courses, and I haven't even really looked into those. But anyway.
Now I'm getting hungry.
So you click each one, and then it will give you the Japanese name. It will tell you, you know.
There's my favorite, Otoro. Otoro. Oh, I love Otoro.
So you got to click it, and then it'll pop up.
And then you'll get more. You'll learn all about Otoro and how to choose it. And
exactly. Where to get the Japanese name, because some menus in Japan, you know, they don't translate them.
Oh, no.
And if you're not using a certain app.
Yeah. This even has a little button you can press and they'll.
Otoro.
Otoro. Now let's say it. I'll learn how to say it right so I'll know what I'm getting. JohnnyJet.com. That's not hard to say. JohnnyJet.com. That's his website. Lots of great information, including everything he just talked about. Follow him on Twitter, Instagram, and now I have to add Vero.
And sign up to my newsletter.
Please. It's free. Why wouldn't you? Thank you, Johnny. Great to talk to you. I know you're hitting the road. Safe travels.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'm here to help. Line three has somebody with a problem in Gary in Cheektowaga, New York. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
You're from the East Coast. You got to tell all your fellow residents out there that water doesn't freeze at 55.
Why do you say that? Are we...
I listen to some of the KFI talk show.
Oh, they act as if they're freezing.
How cold it is.
Yeah. It gets down below 50 here, we just die. We don't have – our blood is thin in California. I know what you mean. You live in somewhere where it's really cold.
Well, it was 64 the other day.
Oh,
it was
cold. Yeah, but there was some weird – that was a weird spring thaw in the middle of the winter. That was weird.
Yep. But, warm weather will be back in another month or two.
I know. In fact, the clocks jump forward soon, right? Or spring back. Fall. Spring forwards, fall back. Spring forward soon. What can I do for you?
Well, I decided that I needed to get a little bit better with my security for email. In my profession, I deal with clients and other colleagues sending information, sensitive information back and forth.
Oh, yeah. I get emails from attorneys all the time. And they're perfectly in the clear. Anybody could read them, but it always has a paragraph at the bottom. And yeah. I wonder how enforceable this is. It says, this isn't addressed to you. Don't read this. It's illegal. Blah, blah, blah. And I wonder how enforceable that is. It's like, you know, come on.
Well, you know what? It works against other attorneys. Another attorney receives something they're not supposed to.
They're not supposed to read it.
Use it.
So that's
why. Against somebody else.
Meanwhile, if you're a physician, there's all sorts of very strict rules about, you know, sending stuff, private information in the clear. You can't do it. So how can we help you do that?
Well, I settled on a service. Cryptomatic has a Lockbin, it's called. It seems to work best for me and for people I deal with. All they need to know is a password that they're going to use that I create for them, or they can tell me what it is. And it makes it easy for them to click on it. But I was talking to a colleague and telling them, here, send me this material through the service I have. And they said, I don't have to do that. I'm using Gmail. You're using Gmail. It's all encrypted anyways.
That's actually true.
Yeah, is it?
Here's the difference. It is true. Gmail encrypts in transit. Now, the problem is a lot of email providers don't have – encryption means scrambling it so nobody can read it. Now, there is a big asterisk next to so nobody can read it, which I'm going to talk about in a second. If it's encrypted, you have to agree on the encryption, right? And so most email providers – don't have encrypted conversations with other email providers. But Gmail knows, well, we're sending it from a Gmail account to a Gmail account. It will be encrypted. It'll be encrypted on Gmail and in transit. But then there's this asterisk, and this may or may not affect you. You didn't encrypt this with your password, so how is it encrypted? With Google's password. Google can read it. That's the big asterisk on a lot of these encryption services. And there's... You know, you can read the terms of service. You can study it up. There are a couple of tells. If, for instance, you forget your password and they can send it to you, that means they know it, right? That would be one definite giveaway. And the reason a lot of services don't do true encryption, where you create the password, is there's no recovery possible. You know, is that what it's called, Cryptomatic?
No, and Cryptomatic is the company. It's called Lockbin, LOCKBIN.
If you can forget your password and they can't help you, that's good.
Yeah, that's how their system is.
They should say, you know, hey, don't lose your password. There's no way we can get it back. That means they don't know it. But a lot of services, and by the way, Apple and iCloud, Dropbox, they know the password. So that may be okay with you. You may trust Google or Apple or Dropbox or Microsoft. You may say, well, it's fine if they know the password. But it's important to understand the limits of your privacy. The only time it's completely private between you and your recipient is if you use an encryption technology that only you know the password. Maybe your recipient knows it, maybe he doesn't. This is why I like something called public key crypto that has two keys. One key you keep to yourself and one key you can hand out. And then anyone can send you something that's encrypted, but only you can read it, and vice versa. That's public key cryptography. That's the preferred way. That's kind of how PGP, Pretty Good Privacy, and GNU Privacy Guard work. I'm looking at Lockbin here. Secure messaging simplified. It looks like they have good strong encryption. They're using AES 256, and of course SSL is the standard encryption all websites use. Here's a good question, and they have it in their FAQ. Is it HIPAA compliant? Because HIPAA is a very strong federal privacy rule for medical documents, and it says it is. So that's very, you know, Dropbox isn't, iCloud isn't. So that's a very good way to test that it's safe. And then then you should see, what if I forget the password? What happens? And if they say, you're out of luck, that's good.
Well, they tell you to download the password file. They give you that opportunity to do that, I guess.
Okay, but I notice where they say, will you comply with police demands to turn over my messages? They say, if legally demanded, we must supply your encrypted documents and metadata. Lockbin does not have a back door, so we are unable to supply decryption keys for your documents. That's exactly what you want. It means that you control the key, not them.
Yep.
So that's good news. That means nobody can read it unless you give them permission, in effect. So, yeah, this is if they're not lying, which, you know, that's computing is a certain amount of trust, but if you trust the company and you trust their policy and you think these answers to these questions are accurate, this is secure.
Now, the question is the passwords, and I have personal password vaults, one you recommend and another one that I use. But to make things simple, if I just told my clients, when I need to communicate with you, I'm creating a password for you to use this system. And it's always going to be, and I don't laugh, it's always going to be your social security number and your birth date. My theory is that if someone knows their social security number and their birth date, they're not going to be breaking into my email. They're going to be breaking into my client's bank account.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's a safe one. So, that solves that problem. Okay. Yeah. This is the problem with what we call symmetric key cryptography. One key, both sides need to know it. There's always this risk that in the transport of the key, it will be intercepted. And that's why public key crypto is so powerful, because there is no key transmitted. You keep that private key close and you don't let anybody see it. And it's the only thing that can be used to decrypt it. You don't want to use that with your customers. This is what's kept cryptography and encrypted email in a very limited sphere, is because it's too hard to use. So I think what you're doing is fine. It's so much better than what anybody else is doing, to be honest.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Are you an attorney? Is that your business?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Most attorneys don't do. Yes, you have socials. You have tax returns. You have a fiduciary responsibility to your clients to keep that private. And I'm thrilled that you're doing that and you're paying attention. There's another system that I use that's very good. Lockbin reminds me of. It's called Mini Lock. This is also a trust no one encryption service. And it's a symmetric. They can, you share the key. It's a way of locking files and transmitting files. This is an open source standard. So I like open, because that means somebody can read it and see if it's doing what it says or if there's a back door for anybody and that kind of thing. So this is another one I would look at, and this requires no third party at all. MINILOCK.io if you want to know more about it. And you do have to share a key. And the key would not be a social. It would be a long, strong key, which you'd have to share. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I'm glad. This was a great thing to talk about. I'm really glad that you called and asked about it, Gary, because I think a lot of people, your friend was right that Google is encrypted, but it's not encrypted safe enough for what you do, I don't think.
Yeah, that's what
we had a sponsor, Citrix, that has a service that's specifically for attorneys that makes it very easy. You get an upload page. That might also be something to look into.
Yeah, I did. They're a little expensive.
They're not cheap. Yeah. They're not cheap. And then you have to pass that along to your clients, and they may not like that. I think what you're doing sounds great.
With Lockbin, I can put a link in my signature on my emails.
Perfect.
That the clients can click on, and it takes them to a page where they can upload files.
That's all you need. Yeah. That's ShareFile does that, but it's more expensive. Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention to you, though, you're talking about watches. I use the Garmin Vivo Active HR.
Runners love that watch. That's a runner's watch.
I mean, it does, it'll tell you who's calling, but there's nothing else.
Right.
It doesn't do much else than that.
And the heart rate's pretty accurate, you find?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had no problem with it. I've used it with chest straps to check it. I use exercise equipment. I use it for hiking and biking. I even wear it when I go to my doctor and I check, my pulse against the nurses.
And this is fairly affordable. It's $130. That's not bad at all.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It's been dropping in price. I bought it a couple of years ago. It was a little bit more, but
yeah,
it's been dropping in price.
Well, I trust Garmin. Oh, I see. You have the Vivo Active, probably. I'm looking at the Vivo Smart, which is $120.
No, yeah, this is the Active HR.
The Active is $250, yeah. But that gives you a lot more information.
But I think you can get everywhere for $150.
Not bad.
It's usually on sale.
Yeah, this is really... Oh, yeah, look, you can answer a call. Wow, that's cool. Is it comfortable? It looks a little bulky.
It is bulky. That's why I usually wear it just for outdoor activity.
Right. Yeah.
It's not a watch I'd wear to work.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Thank you for the recommendation.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Hey, have a great day. Take care. Yeah, Emily the Strange says, that's my watch. I love my HR2 Active. I love that one. Hey, let me talk about our sponsor before we go too much farther. I see we're already in the third hour. Fracture. Oh, you know about them, right? Have I? I've told you about them. Oh, I love my... Let me get some prints here and show you. Fracture is a home decor company that takes your pictures that are normally living out of sight and out of mind, on your Photos app, and puts them up, prints them up on glass, and you can put them up on the wall and see them. And, we have photos all over the house now, thanks to Fracture. Here's an example. This is a picture Lisa took of me. This is not on the wall of my house because I don't like it, but it's a good example. So you print it on glass. It comes in this with this backing on it, so it's to protect it and travel and transit. But look at the look at what it comes with. So they have it comes with a screw. You take this out of the backing. It's ready to hang. It's got, it's on foam core, acid-free backing, and you just use a screw and you hang it on the wall. And I tell you, there's something about pictures on glass. The color just come to life. These are the sizes. That's kind of the middle size, like 8 by 10. This is the smallest, 4.8 by 6.4. That is a picture of the high school graduation. This is a picture I gave to many family members a couple of years ago when Henry graduated from high school of my children, Henry and Abby. And I think black and white especially looks great in this. Isn't that rich? Fracture.me. They print them all in their factory in Gainesville, Florida. U.S. source materials. It's a carbon neutral factory. They have, of course, a 60-day happiness guarantee. So if for any reason you don't love your order, they will refund you. This is the biggest size. Look at this. 21.6 inches by 28.8 inches. This is a picture I took in the Galapagos. I don't want this to languish in my Photos app. I want to show everybody. So if you put this on the wall, This is like the size you'd put over the fireplace, right over the mantle. Bring a special memory to life. It's a great gift. Or decorate your home with moments that tell your story. Don't let them languish like in a shoebox. Get them up on the wall. Fracture.me. If you use the code TechGuy15 at checkout, you'll get 15% off your first order. TechGuy15. Do tell them you heard it on the Tech Guy show in their one-word survey. This is one of my favorite pictures I took on the train ride to Machu Picchu. And look how the color just comes alive. You almost feel like you're on the train, right? Sorry about that reflection. They have big lights in here. But you see, it really looks good. Fracture.me. Offer code is TechGuy15. And you'll get 15% off at checkout on your first order. Fracture.me, TechGuy15. We thank Fracture not only for their support, but bringing my photos back from the dead. Here's another one. This is my favorite one of Henry. We have this one in our living room. This is a duplicate. Henry at his graduation dinner. Again, I made it black and white because it felt timeless, right? Felt like Sinatra in the Rat Pack, and he's glaring at me. I put a border on it, but you don't have to have a border. They have an editor built into the Fracture website, lets you put borders on or not, take off the borders, to crop the picture as you want, color, change colors and so forth. It's a very capable editor, and that's on the site too. They have square style for your Instagram photos, and you can import right from Instagram or Facebook if that's where your pictures are stored. Fracture.me. Don't forget, offer code TechGuy15. Use that at checkout on your first order to get 15% off. And do tell them in their one-question survey, I heard it on the Tech Guy Show. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, dashboard cams, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still call. We get calls from all over the world. Thanks to the internet, just use Skype out and you can call that number, 888-827-5536. As I've said a couple of times on the show today, we put links and all the information, everything I talk about, on a website so you don't have to write it down while you're driving around town. You just remember one thing, techguylabs.com. Tech Guy, that's me. My labs, I'm in a lab coat. Working in my lab late one night. TechGuyLabs.com. That's free, by the way. There's no sign-up. There's no fee. You feel free to use that anytime. And we have a nice search engine, so you can go back and find information and all that stuff. TechGuyLabs.com. Back to the phones, and line two is Rick in Santa Monica, California. Hi, Rick.
Here I come.
Here he comes to save the day. I think it's Rick.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great, yep, Rick. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I need your help.
Yes, sir.
I just recently upgraded a Surface Pro 4 with kind of low-level specs to a new Surface Pro.
Very nice.
And my goal is with the full-blown specs, with a terabyte hard drive, i7, 16 gigabytes of RAM.
Nice.
Very nice. So, but what I'd like to do is be able to move all my programs and all my data over from one computer to the other as easily as possible.
Yeah. Programs are not easy, period. And I don't recommend any tool to move them over. Data is a snap, but programs are harder. And I understand your desire to make it easy. You don't want to reinstall everything, but it is, you've just got to. It's so part of the problem is the way Windows programs install. They don't just put a file in the programs folder. They spread stuff all over the place. They put libraries in different directories, DLL files. They change registry keys. They add registry keys. All of these things spread all out are very hard to find and recover. And there are, you know, uninstaller and mover programs that in theory will get all that stuff and move it. But I'll give you an example. It's a great way to get in something we call DLL hell. Library files, DLLs, that stands for dynamically linked libraries, are files that programs use for commonly used routines. And the theory was, originally, well, you'd have one DLL and all the programs would use it to do things like draw windows or, you know, stuff that programs commonly do. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out that way. There's one particular DLL that causes a lot of problems, a C++ library, and there are many of them. Different versions. And the wrong version in the wrong spot can cause other problems with other programs, can cause your computer to crash. And my fear is when you move your program over, and it might pick up that DLL saying, well, that's one that this program installed. Bring it with it, put it where it thinks it belongs, and then cause problems with other programs. It's a mess. If you want a reliable Windows system, there really is only one way. You start this new Surface, this lovely new Surface Pro, and reinstall the programs you need. In fact, in my opinion, it's an opportunity to install fewer programs than you had on the old one. There's a very strong rule that I really want to encourage people to keep in mind. Only install programs you absolutely have to. Every program you install is a potential security problem, a potential reliability problem. There's just no way around that. There's always flaws in programs. So anytime you install a program you don't need, you're opening a door that you shouldn't open. And so when you start with a new computer, I would just install as needed, because I guarantee you there's programs on that old Surface Pro that you'd never use again, and they shouldn't live there. I do the same thing. I collect programs. I have hundreds of programs I'm never going to use, but I just have to have that program. Mm-mm. Don't do it. So this is, I understand it, but sometimes raises problems because you don't have the disks. Nowadays, it's easier because most programs are installed by downloads. You know, if you don't have the serial number, a lot of companies will recover it for you. My strong encouragement is back up your data, sure. That'll be in the, you know, documents and settings folder under that login. You can just copy that to a USB key or an external hard drive. That way you're making a copy, which is a good thing. It's a backup. Then put it back, you know, log into your account and copy it over at that time. But I wouldn't do it with the programs. I'd reinstall the programs.
So you wouldn't use LapLink?
No, there's lots of programs that do that. And I can tell you it's a recipe for disaster.
Okay.
Is there a reason you want to do that? Is there something you don't have access to that you just have to have?
No, it's just speed and ease.
Yeah. So this is a case where you're starting with a fresh computer, brand new operating system. You know how fragile Windows is. Everybody who's used Windows knows you can screw it up pretty good.
Right.
Don't push your luck. Hey, I'm lazy too. I completely understand, but it's so much better, and it is easier. And I bet you most of those programs are a lot easier to install than you think.
Right. No, none of them are that hard to install.
Yeah.
It's just time.
Think of it this way. This is exciting. You got a brand new, top of the line, super fast system. You want it to stay that way. You're going to carefully cultivate this system. In fact, I would strongly suggest getting an external USB drive. You connect to this thing and use an image backup system. Microsoft actually ships one. They call it the old Windows 7 backup, but you can make an image. Yeah, make an image of the drive. Of the drive as you get it right out of the box, and then get it all set up with just this minimum setup that you of programs you want, and image that too. Next time, it'll be a lot faster. Like if you decide I want to start over with my Surface Pro, you'll be able to start over in a very nice, clean way.
Perfect. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah, save yourself. This can really end badly. This DLL hell, this is not better. And it's just, I think, I really want to underscore this. I'm increasingly of the opinion that don't install programs until you need them. You know, sometimes you get there and I'm going to have an Adobe Reader on there. I'm going to have Flash on there. I just know that at some time I'm going to need them. But you're putting stuff on there that's opening holes in your system. It's not a good idea. And if we can avoid that, the fewer programs, the safer your system, period. And that, by the way, that extends to antiviruses as well. I don't install them. If you need them, that's a different matter. When you need it, install it, but not before then. That's the key. 8888 Ask Leo. If you disagree, you can call. Let me know. Tell me you disagree. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, website techguylabs.com. We get back to our conversations right after this. Stay here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number is 888-827-5536. I mentioned I'm going to review the OWL camera. I'll probably do that next week. I want to give it some more time. I only had it for a day, but I'm very impressed. This is a new dash cam that has a camera going backwards and front. A lot of people have been asking what's the best. This one is very impressive. And then a number of people have been asking also about this new Windows on ARM. Microsoft announced this a couple of months ago, and we've seen now it's the first one. It came out in last week at Mobile World Congress from Hewlett-Packard. It's called the NVX2, and it's really an intriguing system because it's based not on an Intel processor, but on a Qualcomm Snapdragon 835. That's the kind of chip that's in your smartphone. It's a 12-inch screen, small screen, but they say because of the ARM processor, and it's running Windows 10, 10S, but you can upgrade it to 10 Pro for free. Because it's running on an ARM processor, they're claiming up to 22 hours of battery life. It's a pound and a half. It's kind of like a souped-up tablet, right? But running a full version of Windows. I'm very intrigued by this. It has a touch screen, comes with a pen, comes with a detachable keyboard. It should come March 16th, I think, a couple of weeks. So I'll have a review of that in a couple of weeks. But intriguing new category of, you don't get new categories of PCs very often. A PC based not on an Intel chip, not on an AMD chip, but on an ARM processor, Qualcomm Snapdragon. Be interesting. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Let's go back to the phones. Richard in Los Angeles is next. Hi, Richard.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good, good. Enjoying the show today. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. What can I do to help you?
Well, I have old 8 millimeter films from my childhood.
Oh, cool. How nice.
They are nice.
Yeah.
They have been put into a DVD format back in 1999.
Oh, that's great.
And they were just handed to the people, and there's no particular rhyme or reason to the order. No,
of course not.
So I could be 2 years old here or 9 years old.
Oh, that's too bad.
At the same time, I wanted to do something a little bit special for myself and my family and take snippets of myself with certain cousins and send them those items and certain snips with other.
Oh, man, these DVDs are a treasure chest. You can have fun for years with this.
Yeah, I've got one in the group of our family stuff. My wife has like about 24, so she's got the Trevor.
Holy cow, that's a ton. Yeah, because you can only get a couple of hours. Well, I don't know. Is it a data disc or is it a video DVD? I presume it's video that you could put in the DVD player.
It's a video DVD. Yeah,
yeah. So it's only a couple of hours.
I think 1999. I mean, that's that was still good technology then.
Well, but also good that you saved them because these films are degrading over time, and so it's good that somebody had the foresight to digitize them. Now that it's digitized, it's a snap for you to do anything you want with them.
To keep them.
Yeah.
But I was really trying to figure out: is there not an easy way? But is there a way that a novice like myself who has no real editing experience can use some sort of a program online to review what's on the disc, save items on the
disc? Well, you don't want to do anything online. I think you misspoke there. I hope you're not.
Okay.
Because online, these are too big to work with in a quick fashion online. Certainly. So here's what I would start with. First, you have a computer?
Yep.
First, get them off the DVD onto the computer. That's an easy thing to do. And that means at that point, if you want, you can upload them to Google Photos or, store them somewhere online to share with people. But you might want to edit them first. And you're going to do that locally. You're not going to do that in the cloud. It's just there's too much data to send back and forth in real time. So you can do everything on your computer and then upload it to the cloud.
And then upload it.
Yeah. So the first thing is to get the data off the disks. Now, commercial DVDs are copy protected. I'm going to presume yours is not.
It is not protected. However, bear with me a second here. All right. I have what's called a video TS file.
Yeah, yeah. They're VOBs and VTSs. That's the standard format so that you can play it in a DVD player. What you want is an MP4 file that you can edit in a video editor. So you're going to use something free called Handbrake.
Yes.
From handbrake.fr to what we call rip. You know, you re-rip CDs to make them digital. You rip a DVD to make it digital on your hard drive. It doesn't mean rip off. It means just tear it off the DVD.
Tear it off.
Once it's an MP4. And by the way, you can play with the settings in Handbrake, but there also are presets. I'd make it the highest quality preset because you don't want to degrade this.
Correct.
Currently, the way DVDs work, it's stored as an MPEG-2 format file. That's the compression algorithm. You could work with it in MPEG-2, but generally people use MPEG-4 for editing because MPEG-2 is complicated. It has keyframes, and it means that you're going to – sometimes when you edit it, it won't edit exactly where you think it's editing. It's better to work with an MPEG-4. So you're going to rip it by – taking the files off of the hard drive and converting them into an MP4 format. But do that at a high bit rate with high quality. That way you won't degrade it at all. Now you have it on the hard drive, you can edit it. And I'm going to recommend a video editor that's inexpensive but very good from Adobe. It's called Premiere Elements, $70. It is designed for you. It's designed, if you Google Premiere Elements, you'll get right to it. It's designed for people who don't have editing experience but want to take family videos and make something useful out of them. It can make them look pretty. You can cut it easily. You can add music. You can change the soundtrack. It will let you burn it out to a DVD if you want to share it that way. But more likely what you'll do is edit it and upload it to a service or store it on your Google Photos or something like that so that you can share it with family and friends.
Exactly, and that's the ultimate goal. Unfortunately, as time passes on, there's not as much family to share it with, and that's what we want to do before.
I'm
the last survivor.
It's such a boon that you have this, right? So it's wonderful that somebody took the time to digitize it, back in the last century. And now we're going to get it into the next century by digitizing it, which means it'll be available forever, and putting it in the cloud, which means it'll never be lost, and sharing it with family and friends. But the first step is that ripping with the handbrake.fr and editing with Premiere Elements.
Sounds easy enough.
It is easy. And, it's going to be a fun project.
I was looking forward to doing this almost a month ago. But with an impending vacation, I said, I can't start this and leave in 2 days.
Right.
It's
No. It's give yourself a week or two to get used to Premiere Elements. There's a learning curve. Editing video, I mean, there are things you could do it very easily with cut and paste, but it's not much harder to learn. And you would like to maybe add music or effects or put a montage together with dissolves. Transitions, make it look a little more professional. And the difference between doing that and cutting and pasting is not a lot. You can learn this. Give yourself a week or two to read the manual and play with it a little bit, and I think you'll have no trouble. And who knows? This might be a new career. I used to think I've edited video for a living. I hate it. Too much work. I used to think no humans would want to do this, but there's a lot of reason to learn it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is easily the best least expensive solution. There are much more expensive, solutions like Sony Vegas and stuff that are even more capable. But Adobe makes a professional program. We use it here called Premiere. That's $1,000. That's used by, pros. But Elements there's Photoshop Elements and Photoshop. This is Premiere Elements. It's the basic version, has all the power, but they've made the interface straightforward. It's not going to be difficult to learn, I think. And it's fun to do this. Once you've got it, you'll just crank these out. The first one's going to be hard, and the rest of them will be easy. And they have an offer right now for $70, which is a 30% off. So that's a good reason to get this. I'm wondering, actually, now, I haven't used Premier Elements in a while. I'm betting that Premier Elements might import from that DVD directly without even getting Handbrake. Anybody have any experience with that? We were talking about our last caller has a bunch of old family DVDs. Somebody digitized, thank goodness, the Super 8 and 8 millimeter film, put it on DVDs, and he now wants to edit that. There are standard DVDs, you know, with the VOB files and the VTS files. And I was mentioning you can rip those with Handbrake, but I wonder, I wouldn't be surprised if Premier Elements can also import the video from the DVD player. So before you get that, you might check, you're going to need Premier Elements to do the editing. You might check and see if it'll import. You might not need a Handbrake. Handbrake's free, so I use Handbrake all the time. Recommend it for a lot of different uses. It's a great tool. On the line, Nicole from Los Angeles. Hello, Nicole. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. So I'm having a problem with my Wi-Fi. My apartment is long, and the router and the modem is in the front part of the house.
Yeah.
And the very back, my son is struggling to play on his.
He lives back there with his Call of Duty or his Minecraft or something, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And he's
you can barely get him to dinner.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Believe me. Or breakfast or anything. I know the feeling. I couldn't believe it the other day. Our 15-year-old, we got him up to go to school. It's 8 in the morning. He's playing his video. He's playing his game. It's like, yes. You got to go to school. Get dressed. What are you doing? Well, just a minute. I got to beat this boss. It's like, come on. So, yeah. So he has a hard time getting the bandwidth he needs in the back of the apartment. Yeah. That's not unusual. This is a common problem these days because for a number of reasons. We're doing more with Wi-Fi than we ever did. I mean, that Wi-Fi router is not just serving your son and your computers and your phones. It's also feeding up TV. It's doing all, you know, it's being pushed to the limits.
It's working.
Yeah, it's working.
It's working overtime, definitely.
And yes. Your neighbors all have their Wi-Fi, so there's a lot of congestion now. So even if it did work fine, you know, 5 years ago, it's a lot harder to do what you want to do these days. It's one of the reasons, and I'm not going to push this on you because it is expensive. It's one of the reasons, though, you're starting to see ads for these mesh Wi-Fi solutions like the Eero, the Orbi, the Velop. These are all solutions that generally start at $300. Don't worry. I'm not recommending this.
Yikes.
I know. Yikes. I know. But the way they work is you have a base station where yours is now, and then along the way you have a couple more spreading it out. And they're designed to handle a lot of these issues. For instance, they know that somebody getting email in the living room doesn't need as much bandwidth as the Roku box watching Netflix in the bedroom. So it will intelligently route data. It increases, of course, the Wi-Fi footprint because it's multiple radios and all that. And that's one way of handling this. But if all you need is just to get the kid's computer in the back, there are other ways to do that as well. The company that made your Wi-Fi router, did you get it from your internet service provider or did you buy your own?
I got it from the internet provider.
Okay. So this may or may not be the case. You look at the brand on it. Generally, the ones you get from the ISP aren't great. I'm not surprised it's not getting to the back of the apartment. But look at the brand on it. And that you always want to get, you can get what's called a Wi-Fi extender that does what you want it to do. But you always want to get it from the same company that made the base station, if you can.
Okay.
So see who's your internet service provider?
Spectrum. It looks like, it says Sage Imcom.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
You might even call the ISP, see if they rent extenders. But an extender will do it. Now, here's why the extender isn't as good as the mesh. The extender cuts the Wi-Fi speed in half in order to do that. Because it has to spend half its time talking to the base station, half the time talking to your son. And so it's half as fast. So that's fine, but you know, maybe more than adequate if you have enough bandwidth. But it will extend it, will double the range. But your son may say, Mom, how do you expect me to play my game at half the speed? Right? So there's, Sage, you have a Sage MCOM, is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yes. Mike B. identified it in the chat room. I don't know if they make extenders or not. It's a very common brand used by Wi-Fi internet service providers. It's French. Huh. Okay. Sagemcom. Well, I don't know if they make extenders. If they do, that would be a way to get that. The other thing you can do that might work a little bit better, depends on the wiring in the flat, is something called power line networking. And what that involves is, I don't know, I bet, though, that you have an extra Ethernet port on your router, the hardwired port. There's one going into the phone jack, but then there might be an extra one that's not used on the back of the Sage MCOM. If there is, you can get a power, go to TP-Link, or you actually get this on Amazon. TP-Link makes power line Wi-Fi. And the way it works is you'll get two units, one that plugs in next to your router, next to your Wi-Fi access point, and you connect that with a wire to your access point, an Ethernet cable it's called. And that's going to provide the internet to that device, which then plugs into the wall, and get this, feeds the internet into the wall through your power lines and all throughout the house.
Oh.
Oh, and then your son plugs in the other end in his room. And he can either get one that is hardwired, so he'd plug it into his laptop, but probably more useful to be to get one that makes another Wi-Fi access point. And then he's got Wi-Fi in his room, but it didn't have to be wireless down the hall. It was through the electrical.
Got it. Okay.
For that to work, though, you'd have to have, and I'm pretty sure you do, an extra port on your router that you have now. And they're about, you can get this probably for $50 or $60. It's not too expensive.
Okay.
And then get the TP-Link power line and networking. And it'll have, it basically will call itself a Wi-Fi extender. It'll have two units, a base unit that plugs into the Sage MCOM. And a unit that your son will be using in his bedroom. Or you could put it out in the hall and then everybody could benefit from it.
Okay.
You might have to play with it a little bit. I'll tell you what, I will put a link at Tech Guy Labs. I will put a link to an Amazon. Do you like buying stuff on Amazon?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I'm a Prime member. Yes.
Yep. So this makes it as easy as can be and they have a good price on it. I'll put a link.
Awesome sauce.
Yeah, $30. Did you just say awesome sauce?
I did.
I thought you did. What are you, 12? Your son is having a bad influence on you, young lady. I love it. No, I like awesome sauce. I'm looking at the TP-Link AC750 Wi-Fi range extender, $30.
Okay.
But I'll put a link in at the Tech Guy Labs show notes. But this will almost certainly work for you. The only issue that sometimes comes up is if there is a junction box, a fuse box in between you and your son, in between the router and your son. It needs to be a straight shoot.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nicole. Have a great day. Awesome sauce. I only know what that is because I'm a teenager too. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Oh, you know who's coming up? Dick D. Bartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, our Gizwiz right after this. This one, though, is good, but it doesn't look like it has both ends. So this is just one end. You need both ends. Let's see. Yeah. Yeah, this wouldn't be a good start because you need to get the other end. So let's see here. You want a kit, I guess. Wow, TP-Link is getting in a lot of different businesses now. TP-Link Powerline. This is called Powerline Networking. There you go. See, there's a two-unit. So you get one in next to the router and one in your son's room. But let's see if we get the Wi-Fi one. There you go. $59.99. So you see the one on the left plugs into, this plugs into your router and the wall. And basically, it's taking that Ethernet out of the router and putting it into the power. And then this plugs in your son's room, and that makes it a Wi-Fi access point. And your son will be able to set this up. But he can set it up to be the same, but I would suggest different SSID, different name and password from the main one. And then, so that's $60. You can get faster ones. I think this will be fine. This is up to 500 megabits. That's more than enough. And then they have it. So this is the kit. So this has the different ones. I think the AV500 is fine. So let me put this in the show notes. Well, it looks like I own one. I did. I know this is fine. I own it. Yeah, I actually set this up so I could review it, and we used it in the house. So, James, if you'd put that in the show notes, that'd be great. Yeah, I have one in my desk drawer somewhere. And that's how we, for a while, that's how I got our Wi-Fi into the gym, which was far enough away that we couldn't do it. Hey, let me talk a little bit about our sponsor today, Rocket Mortgage. You know about Rocket. You've heard me talk about them over and over again. Rocket Mortgage was created by Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running, okay? Not just the best this year, best every year. And they realized that the mortgage process, you know, going to a bank, filling out a 20-page application, then going in, you know, to your records and finding pay stubs and bank statements and all that, it was just stuck in the 19th century, mired in the old days. The mortgage approval process needed a technological, customer-centric revolution. And they did it. They created something that is so much easier, so much faster. There's really, simply put, there is no reason to use any other system. It's called Rocket Mortgage. No, you can do it on your phone right now. You can do it. It's so fast and easy, you can do it at an open house. I mean, literally, apply for a loan and get the loan in minutes. So what you do is you go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Make a note of that. Actually, you could start this process now. If you think you're about to buy or you're going to be looking at houses, might as well be a pre-approved. That's a huge advantage when you're shopping for houses. Oh, mortgage interest rates going up, right? You might want to lock in a low rate. Now would be a time to refi as well. So you go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You'll answer a few simple questions you know off the top of your head. You won't have to look anything up probably. I mean, you just, you know, name, address, birth date, social, that kind of thing. And then, with your permission, they get all the other information they need from the financial institutions. Because Quicken Loans, they have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions. So they could pull that data with your, again, with your permission. So you don't have to go to the attic. They got it all. They crunch the numbers. And this all takes just a few minutes. Like, you're still looking at the phone. They offer you, based on income, assets, and credit, they offer you the loans you qualify for. You choose the down payment. You choose the term. You choose the rate. And you're approved. That took no time. There's a button that says, print out a letter for my realtor. I love that. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender. They're licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. I can't think of any reason you would do anything else. What? I mean, unless you, I don't know, you like going, putting on a tie and going to a bank? Do you like going through the paperwork in the attic? I don't think so. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. It's got to be the Gizwiz. Yeah, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Anytime that disco comes on the radio. See, Michael's got your number. Michael Cozier, our music director, knows Dick DiBartolo is a disco man. He's our Giz Wiz, our Gizmo Wizard, joins us every week. He's also Mad Mag. Yes, you know the name. Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We love Dickie D. So Dick comes each week with something cool. Something. Now, is this another Toy Fair gizmo?
Yes, it is. And I know last week you loved the neuroscience kit.
Yeah.
But you will... A little taken back by the price.
Well, I was also taken back because the guy moves his hand and you don't have any choice. Your hand goes, whoa!
Yeah.
a little creepy.
I know. Well, you were afraid that your son was going to make you sign checks.
Exactly.
I know you ruled that out. So,
yeah.
So here's something else I saw at the show, more in keeping with your budget.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. The company is called Dr. Cool. COOL.
Okay.
And what they were showing at Toy Fair is two new fun chemistry kits. Now, my favorite is the Magic Invisible Test Tube Kit.
Ooh.
So the woman hands me a measuring cup with some fluid in it and a test tube. And she says, when you dip the test tube into the cup, the bottom, any part of the test tube that goes below the surface will no longer exist.
What?
It's really, really neat. So I take the test tube and I make some fake
Wait
sound.
A minute. It disappears.
And the bottom of the test, it's just great.
It's great. What? I'm looking at your video from Toy Fair and you just... come back if you take it out?
No, it dissolves. That's the problem. And they charge you $20 for a new test tube.
No, it's an optical. Oh, it's back. It's an optical illusion.
Yeah. So, Leo, that kit is $12.
I like it. And given the amount of fun you're going to have, that's a fair price.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then the other kit, and these are coming out, I think she said in June, is the Magic Waterproof Kit.
Yeah,
and that's where you take a spoonful of sand.
Yeah,
and again, you take a cup of water. You submerge the spoonful of sand under the water. You take it up, drop the sand in your hand. The sand is totally dry.
What?
If you want, you can drop the sand at the bottom of a cup, and they give you a little sculpting tool. You can make a little design under there, but when you take the sand back out, it's dry.
It's miracle sand.
Miracle sand. and also in that kit, you stick your finger in this powder.
Yeah.
Then you stick your finger in water and your finger is dry.
Nice. I need more of this. Yeah. I need more of this magical powder.
I asked if I could buy a 55-gallon drum, jump in it before I go out in the rain. And I would just
You'd
be
never
dry.
Get wet. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's a miracle. Yeah. So this is Dr. Drool. What is this?
Dr. Cool.
Oh, Dr. Cool.
No, Dr. Drool. That was in the baby show.
Yes. That's Discover with DrCool.com. Dr. Cool. But don't get excited because it's not out till June.
Right. But they have tons of stuff on their website now. Just fun things. And like I said, all the new kits are under $11.99.
These look really good. They're maybe fun. For a little bit younger. Like what age do they say?
You know what? I don't even remember. I know is I was entertained.
Yeah. They've got bugs. So they've got dinosaurs. They've got earth science, crystals, slime, dig kits. I like Dr. Cool because they're exciting kids about science. That's neat.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And reasonable.
Gizwiz.biz. If you want to know more about it, that's Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. And just click on the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy, and there's a link, and there's pictures, and there's that video that Dick shot at Toy Fair and all that stuff. So you can actually see it in action, which is pretty impressive. Gizwiz.biz. Dick's podcast, gizwiz.tv, every week. Lots of gizmos. If you like this, you'll love the show. Lots of gizmos and gadgets. And don't forget, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine at gizwiz.biz.
New game this month.
Did we start a new month? We did.
Yes.
Oh, now
did you know what that thing was?
I had no. I got to go back and look now because I didn't. It looked like a bottle opener or some. I couldn't quite figure out what it was.
Okay.
It's a cup holder. So it's kind of like the purse holder that you loved so much.
Oh yes, yeah. Yes.
It's the clip cup holder from Retro Artist. Oh, did anybody get that right?
About 20 people got it right. Wow. So we picked six at random. It got terrible reviews on Amazon, by the way.
Oh, well, evidently, you wouldn't want to flip off with a cup full of hot coffee.
No, that's what someone said. Yeah. Don't put something heavy on it because it just falls right
off. It comes right off. Don't trust it. Don't trust. But see, this is where you're tricky because you can't tell the scale in these close-up pictures. So it wasn't, if I'd known it was cup size, I might have had a different opinion about the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, why would I do that?
No. Well, there's a new one, equally tricky. It's, well, it's obviously a fingernail pairing from the Iron Giant. That's what it is. That's what I think it is. What do you think it is? All you have to do is go to gizwiz.biz, come up with a funny or correct, either one, answer, and you could win, be in the drawing to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine from this guy right here, Dick DiBartolo. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you next week.
Gizwiz.biz to play the What the Heck Is It contest. I don't think I have, well, I'll try. I have about a minute left. Tyson in Santa Monica. Let's see if we can help you before I go. Hi, Tyson.
Hi there.
What can I do for you?
Thanks for talking to me. Well, it sounds like it's going to be quick, so it's pretty involved. I'm trying to figure out if torrents are a decent way to send files to an individual across the country.
They are. But you don't want to use the standard BitTorrent technology. You want to use something they came up with, same technology, but designed specifically for this, called BitTorrent Sync.
BitTorrent Sync.
Yeah. Now, okay, they've changed the name for reasons I don't know to Resilio Sync. So you're going to go to resilio.com. It's free. Okay. And what you do is you set it up on your computer. He sets it up on his computer. And when you you can create a folder, for instance, with files to share. And you'll send him a very long code that represents that folder. He puts it into his Resilio Sync, and then it automatically synchronizes up.
Sort of like FTP, but instead of being
it's
hard drive.
Yes, exactly. It's better than FTP because if you add files to that folder, it automatically copies over to him, take files out. It's really great. Resilio Sync, and it's free. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Resilio Sync. And you can get it from resilio.com. We'll put a link in the show notes to this. But this is actually really cool. They have a paid tier for business as well. But I think this is great. I use it to back up stuff too. So there's a lot of different ways you can use it. Why do they, I thought it was free. Yeah, there's a free download. I don't know. BitTorrent Sync used to be absolutely free. I don't know if Resilio's commercializing this or what, but you just want to send one file to one guy. It's very easy.
Okay.
The only thing you have to do is email him or text him that long number, and that's what keeps it private. And you can make it, by the way, read only or read and write. So you can share a folder that he can add to, or you can have it a read-only folder that he can't add to.
Great.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you're... Yeah, you're on with me. You're not on the radio. The radio ended.
That's what I figured. I felt like I was getting played off the Oscars there. You're
done. Well, they're playing me off, not you.
Fair enough.
But I decided not to give up. No, so you and I are still talking. Actually, we're on the podcast portion of it, but just not the broadcast portion of it right now.
Well, in the now that I know you got to get into another show, but
let me first of all say goodbye to Michael. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, sorry.
See ya. Bye. I think he already hung up. He's bored. Okay. Go ahead. No, I have plenty of time. I have an hour before the next show.
Okay. The .vob file that is on a DVD.
Yep.
Going back to two callers ago, it seems like it was an LA day. Everybody was from LA, including myself.
Yeah.
It's something that you can drag directly into Premiere. I'm pretty sure it must be in Elements as well. Literally just open your non-copyrighted DVD,
Doi.
Drag the DVD file onto a local disk.
Of course you can.
And then you've got a video file.
Because the VOB is a multiplexed version of the video and the audio. So you have a MPEG-2 in that VOB file and you have an AAC audio. And I guess Premiere's smart enough to go, oh, here's the MPEG-2 port. And here's, you still might want to transcode it, right? You don't want to edit MP2 video, though, because it's not frame accurate.
No, it isn't bad in Premiere, because, I mean, let's face it, you know, half the cell phone video is not frame accurate. All
that's true.
And for the use of what he's doing, it seems like it would almost, in its export, would, after editing it, it would do that. And instead of having individual clips with a whole bunch of different sync rates or whatever, it would output it as one single clip that would have a good hold.
Yeah. Yeah, and probably not transcoding it would be a good idea just because you're going to reduce the quality if you transcode it. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's probably about as low as it can be.
Anyway, right?
It's
8mm to DVD from 1999. Yeah. But let's not degrade it any further.
Yeah.
No, that's good. That's exactly what I was wondering. So you can drag the VOB file off the DVD into Premiere.
I'd have to assume Elements can do everything.
Of course it can.
With just different tools.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Of course it can do that.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, that's a great tip. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for talking.
Have a good one, Tyson. See you later.
Listen, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.